Hi, I'm James Schillinglaw, and we're here at the Virtual Vacation Events Luxury Panel on how luxury will change in the new age of post-pandemic travel. And we have a very auspicious lineup of speakers for you, the heads of really the major travel agency consortia and marketing networks that really focus on luxury travel today. And I'm going to introduce them one by one. So then they'll just wave at you, say. First, we have Alex Sharp, who's the president and CEO of Signature Travel Network. And then we have Matthew Upchurch, who is the chairman and CEO of Virtuoso. And then we have Gabe Rizzi, who's actually the new president of Internova Travel Group, which you might be more familiar with because it oversees, it's part of Travel Leaders Group, Travel Leaders Network, and of course, the Global Travel Collection. And then finally, not last, but certainly not least, but because he's Canadian, we have to put him last now, right? Sorry, David. David Harris, who's president and CEO of Ensemble Travel Group. Well, welcome, and thank you for participating in this great panel. It's very rare, I think, that I mean, everybody knows each other, but unfortunately, we don't all get together that much anymore in person, but we all hope that's going to change. Let's first off get to the first question. What is luxury travel, or what will it be after the pandemic? What is going to be different about the way people consider luxury travel to be? And has there been really a paradigm change in luxury travel? We'll start with you, Matthew, if you don't mind.
Well, first of all, one of the things I'd like to share is that disruptions tend to accelerate trends. Either to the upside or the downside. And I think the most important thing we all need to, you know, through this horrible time is all of the things that had us in the golden era of travel have not fundamentally changed. Mm-hmm. And not only have they not fundamentally changed, wealth has grown exponentially during this. I mean, I know we've all suffered, but there's been trillions of dollars of wealth that has been created during this time. And so I think what I'd like to say is that, you know, think about what 9/11 did to the whole psychology of carpe diem and life is short and whatever. And I think that all of those things right now, travel is being driven by policy rather than where I want to go. But I think that's important. And then also the other thing, you know, when you think about luxury, I also, we were looking at it from a three, we call it looking at it through 3D glasses. Our three were a generational lens, a passion point lens, and a source market lens. And I think that it's incredibly varied. And one of the reasons that I'm so bullish on our profession is because the travel advisors today, the diversity of travel advisors today mirror the diversity of the luxury customer. And therefore, their ability to translate value in a way that's very difficult for people to do purely online really has elevated their profession. And so I think that. And then the other thing will be that people want to travel more consciously. I think that there's a big theme. We've been focusing on sustainability for over 12 years, and we've got a lot of data. 82% of Virtuoso clients have said that they plan to travel more consciously and purposefully past this. And I think you're going to see a lot of destinations the same way. There's a lot. I spoke to the mayor of Amsterdam and a couple of other people. There's a lot of places that are saying, I don't want to go back to what it was.
Right. Now, Alex, same question. What is going to change for luxury travel, if anything? Or as Matthew just said, are we going to just pick up from where we left off and possibly look at some other things like, you know, really more sustainable luxury travel? Where are we going from here?
Well, we saw that certainly. I agree with Matthew's comments, and we've seen a lot of those same trends over the years. I think what's happening now, right, is certainly safety, health is paramount. It's added another component, a third leg to the stool. It used to be about destination product, and now it's destination product and health and safety. And really, we're leading with health and safety. You know, so I see the luxury market adjusting a little bit, right? I love the comment that Matthew made around 9/11, right? It made it more important. It made it more critical, right? It changed from being a luxury good to a must-have, right? It changed from being a Louis Vuitton bag to, you know, a core value, something that people needed to do. And I see that evolution continuing now past this. You coop people up for this amount of time, they want to go out, but they want to do it purposefully, right? So they need to be thoughtful about how and where they're going, right? And then the sustainability piece is important as well. So I think for our advisors, it's critical that they match, right? That they truly understand their customers so that they can mimic, they can parrot, you know, what they're looking for in their vacations and their trips, and make sure that they're serving them all the way through that, right? And so there's a lot of opportunity that comes with that, you know, but the advisors have to continue to evolve, have to continue to learn, have to be at the leading edge of these things in order to deliver the kind of travel that the customers are looking for. And certainly from a financial perspective, they can and should be charging more and more for that service because it's critically important. And I think the value of what they're doing will have never been higher in the time of our industry.
No, that's a great comment. Now, Gabe, from your perspective, what is going to be changing or what's not going to be changing?
Well, I agree with, you know, the comments that Alex and Matthew have made. Additionally, I think there's, you know, what we're seeing is it's a big trust deficit within our customer base, and our advisors are now having to help kind of bridge that trust gap that there is with their travelers. And they're doing that through information, because a lot of the information that, you know, we've been given literally for the last year has been inconsistent. And as humans, you know, we thrive consistency, and that's been a gap. So being consistent on safety protocols and how to travel with confidence and actually trust in the well-being of the people that they're gonna be with is critical. And knowing that where they're ending up and where they're traveling to is going to meet the exact expectations that were set by that advisor. So that's one. I think the other thing that we're hearing is a big focus on privacy. You know, folks are, you know, privacy has become a luxury now. And, you know, how that bespoke, you know, private experience is delivered is front and center with them. And I think another area that we're hearing a lot of feedback on is people haven't hugged in a while and they want to spend a lot of time with their families. You know, so we're seeing longer lengths of vacations. I mean, we're seeing a record amount of world cruises being booked. And, you know, that speaks volumes to them wanting to get some things off their bucket list and say, you know what, you know, as Matthew said, there's pent up, not just, you know, demand, but capital. Right. And, you know, you've never seen a Hertz behind, you know, you've never seen a U-Haul behind a Hertz. So, you know, you kind of want to, you know, experience that now with the ones that you love. So we're seeing, you know, that too. And, you know, I think, you know, lastly, you know, the point that Alex made on the value of an advisor, I mean, it's our value prop has never been stronger.
Sure. No, absolutely. And we're seeing that everybody seems. And today we're actually recording this on National Travel Advisor Day, so it's appropriate. We'll end with you, David. Any more things to add in terms of how luxury will be different post-pandemic?
Well, the gang has certainly covered off most of it, which is terrific, not surprisingly either. But I'll start out by first saying that U-Haul is never a U-Haul. It's either an I-Haul or a me-Haul. But that aside, I would absolutely say that there's no question that the initial signs are that those with the ability to travel and who have typically traveled in luxury will do so at an even greater frequency in the near future. It's also expected that those who are upmarket travelers will also be traveling more often and most likely more luxuriously than they have in the past, right, catching up for lost time, you know, at least in the near term. And I really think that the early signs are also, you know, they're going to include people booking in higher categories than their usual levels, whether it's in land, on land or at sea. And I think safe to say that there are signs of a paradigm shift, although how much is pent-up demand remains the question. Either way, these are very encouraging signs.
No, absolutely. Now, we're going to stick with you because the next question is something we did talk about a little bit there. But, you know, from your members, from your individual travel advisor members, members of your travel agencies, how should they, travel advisors, approach selling high-end travel in this post-pandemic world? What do they have to do to get people back? And also, what are the additional we learned they had a lot of additional services they had to do in the last year. What are they going to have to do in the future, David?
It's a great question, James. Honestly, that you know, we're very confident the approach by advisors should remain the same as it has always been. And that is about, you know, their credibility and their integrity within their chosen profession. So let me explain. It's a disservice to not ensure travelers' interests are not fully understood before making any recommendations. And only then is it best to ensure clients are presented with options that are, of course, you know, that address those interests, but also include upselling and more luxurious options too. I'm not sure that there will ever be the former normal. Instead, this is about what will be the new steady state. And that's going to take some time to evolve. However, really, there are positive indicators for boutique, smaller groups, luxury travel. All of that is very promising at this point.
No, that's great. Now, Gabe, same question. I mean, what are you telling your travel advisors on what they need to do to kind of retool or at least look at the market differently, at least for the luxury client?
Well, I think it's all in the details, you know, and what we're hearing is, you know, they want to know how do we react to last minute changes? Because what we do know is that it almost changes daily. And depending on the destination, they need to keep tabs on their luxury travelers because there could be a change they need to make them aware of. And their clients are expecting that kind of minute by minute inspection of how is the trip going, keeping in touch with them along the way. And as we saw when we were at the WTTC, you know, just exiting a destination comes with its own complexities. So now you're going to have to make sure that your clients know 72 hours, depending on where they're at, to get, you know, their antigen tests and make sure that all of their paperwork is up to date. And, you know, they want that friction, because what we have learned is all of these complexities have created friction in the travel space, and they're expecting our advisors to remove that.
And Alex, the same question. What are you saying to your signature advisors about the new, you know, what they need to do to serve the new luxury, well, the luxury client as we emerge?
So a lot of the same stuff. A couple of additional pieces. I think efficiency is going to be very important behind the scenes. They're going to need to be efficient so that they can spend the time and energy with their customers, because what customers are expecting is optionality, right? And then being with them through that entire journey, right? So there are customers, you know, I went to a seminar probably 20 years ago and listened to the doorman of the Beverly Hills Hotel talk about how he taught customers how to be luxury, right? They went to the Beverly Hills Hotel because it was the Beverly Hills Hotel, but they didn't even realize they had the funds and the access to things that they had. And so he was the doorman, and he would say, oh, but if you want to go to this club, I can do this, and I can get you a car, and I can do these different things. And they learn. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to show and teach some of our customers what options are available, right? And that's the beauty of what a travel advisor does, is they can make dreams come true that maybe the customer didn't even realize they wanted, right? So whether it be private, whether it be, you know, different sort of secluded options for them, whatever it is, they're gonna need the time to explore those things and to present those things to customers. And the only way they're gonna be able to do that in this comeback is to be more efficient on the back end, right? So we're focusing a lot on tools and how do we deliver those tools so that they can have that information at their fingertips so they can do the art, right? How do we do the science so they can do the art with their customers and then follow them through that journey and make sure that they're delivering and changing courses wherever necessary? Because as Gabe said, if we know anything, we know it's gonna change, right? We're gonna book it, it's gonna change. I mean, book an airline ticket now for 2 months out and watch how many schedule changes come in and how many different protocols are going to change. It's unbelievable.
Well, it's going to be tough, and it's tough right now to keep track of all that. Well, Matthew, you can wrap this one up on the travel advisors. What are you telling your Virtuoso travel advisors on how they should approach the market today?
Well, first of all, it's infinitely fair how you're going back and forth, because by the time you get to the end of all these great answers, so you think about what to do. But, you know, everything that everybody said is right on the money. And what's really interesting, I think, for me, then, to add anything of value here, is I think that one of the things that I perceive and then I think about is, you know, throughout my entire career, I've only figured out there's only two ways of making more money in this business. Either you have to do more trips in the same amount of time, or the value of the trip has to be greater. And right. To this day, I haven't figured out anything else. And what's interesting about that is I think particularly when you're going after the luxury customer, the idea of how to really consciously develop an optimized portfolio of clients, that truly value you, right? Whether it's retainers, fees, or quite frankly, just don't suck the life out of you.
Right.
You know, you only have so much energy and so much time. And I think that when I see a lot of the most successful luxury advisors, you know, my early career, I go back to the fact that there really wasn't like, I mean, luxury, every, you know, travel was kind of luxurious in the beginning, but it became this whole idea of how do I actively manage my portfolio of clients, right? So I think an optimization of your client portfolio is really important. And also kind of understanding the whole idea of what I think Gabe said about trust, right? There's a great book. We actually had him speak years ago and then we did it during the pandemic. There's a great book called The Trusted Advisor.
Right.
And it's not about travel. It's about any profession that has to do with advice, which is more and more. And then I think the other piece is, even if you're not charging fees or something, I mean, you know, we actually finally figured out that whole thing about fees has never like been settled. What we finally figured out, particularly with a super affluent, smart, savvy, you know, type of people, it's if you don't have the courage to say, let me tell you how I earn a living, right? Then they're always wondering what the hell's up your sleeve. So whether it's a fee or whether it's like, if you book these things, I'm your person. But if you book all this other stuff, whatever. So there are those methodologies that I think are really, really important. And then also focusing on preferreds. It's been great to see how much more our preferred sales have grown even in this downtime. And I think that's been great. And then the other one is, how to merchandise who you are. That, you know, we're all here running and supporting these great professionals, but the reality is the bulk of the market is still direct and DIY. I mean, the opportunity is huge. And so I think that how you merchandise yourself, being very clear in the way about how you add value before, during, and after the trip is incredibly important, and how you express that. And, you know, back to the thing about making more money, the two primary ways that consumers find somebody is either if they go to what somebody thinks is a generalist, it's normally a referral, or it's a specialty.
Right.
But what I've actually found over the years is most people that find somebody over a specialty, if it's the right type of client, wants them to become a specialist in them.
Right. Well, and that's what it is. It's being a specialist in your customer. And I do like your comment about fees, because it's been my impression, because I've seen it being happen. And I know certainly Alex will agree. Almost everyone, more travel advisors started to charge fees, or said they would during this pandemic. And, you know, that's a battle. I mean, I've been writing about for 20 years. And
talk to the ones that did, and they'll tell you every single time I lost the ones that didn't want to pay. It was like I created a vacuum that sucked in people who did.
There you go. So, now that's perfect. Yeah.
Go for it.
Yeah. Let's talk the next question. Let's go to Gabe about, you know, really how important will your groups be to luxury selling advisors and helping them recover? I mean, how important are you now? I mean, you obviously, all of you have been doing some amazing things to support your member agencies and, of course, their advisors. But Gabe, how important is having groups like yours to be out there helping?
James, it's huge. You know, I love what Alex said. You know, one of the things I particularly love about this industry is the notion of making dreams come true. And there's no other industry that does that but this one. And I can tell you that, you know, the public, and especially in the luxury space, they're dreaming big. They've had a year to dream. And they're looking for us now to deliver on those increased and enhanced expectations. And it's up to our incredibly talented advisors to be able to deliver, you know, those really bespoke experiences that they're coming to the table with. And the value that we provide is by procuring the best contracts, the most unique options for them to actually, you know, surprise and delight their customers as they're coming to the table and saying, you know what, we've been stuck for a year. We've been planning, you know, this short trip, but we're going to do 15 days and we're going to bring the whole family. Sure. What do you recommend in Southeast Asia? And, you know, so these are the kinds of things that, you know, I think as, you know, as a supporting agency, we provide is to help them, number one, communicate to them, but also, you know, bring preferred rates and preferred access that they would not be able to get on their own.
No, absolutely. Now, David, we'll go to you in terms of how do groups such as yours be relevant and actually be important to helping support travel advisors as we emerge?
I'm going to approach this one a little differently, James, only from the standpoint that, as with each of my esteemed colleagues here, Ensemble's never been more, and I think I believe it was Matthew referenced it earlier, that never will there be a time when the need for our services and our support be greater than it will be when we emerge from this crisis.
Right.
That is a fact. And I think what's really important is that, you know, we, each one of us is able to provide scale and scope to these members. I know I'm not saying anything that anyone isn't aware of, but the scale and scope of what we provide is basically not affordable on the individual basis. So where I'm going to say it's my approach or my response will be a little different here is that I think I've categorized this one into two different areas in particular. One, I think, is that there will be unwavering emphasis on ethical and highly empathetic conduct. Right. And, you know, just as our members and our advisors are going through incredibly difficult times, so too are we and the rest of the industry. And we really must support one another, all stakeholders, and literally within every vertical. But the second one, which I think is so important for all of us, and it has the tie to luxury travel as well. It has ties to all types of travel, and that is advocacy. We have that collectively in this group, and I know collectively in the industry, on behalf of our members and advisors everywhere, honestly, there's nothing more important for what we do than representing the industry at a time such as this. It's exhausting. It's frustrating. However, I think that, you know, this, with the dedication and a single voice, that I know we can continue to make a difference and for all types of travel. So a bit of a diversion from the specific question, but I think important to reference.
Well, certainly your support of overall of the travel advisor community and all the groups that we have here today have been very active in supporting travel advisors. And I've never seen a more unified effort, especially during this time of crisis. But I'm going to go to you, Matthew. You know, I guess to phrase the question now, has your group and maybe the others, depending on who people choose to join, has your group become more relevant now because of this crisis?
Well, you know, more relevant. I mean, obviously, times of stress like this. I mean, for me, I think the word that comes is this is a big believer in co-creation. And if you studied anything, you know, for example, you study the digital world. There's fundamentally two types of enterprises in the digital world. There's platforms and there are aggregators. Aggregation theory is very interesting because the basic Professor Scott Galway of NYU calls it the Benjamin Button companies, where, you know, normally when you create a service or something and you put it out, it deteriorates, right? Aggregation theory basically means that every engaged participant makes the whole more valuable.
Right.
And it keeps getting better. So I think that from that perspective, you know, for us, it's, you know, collaboration teams, making sure we have the right product. Throughout this pandemic, I've never been more happy that we are not where we send people, but where we have members is over 55 countries now, because right. Our Aussies help our Aussie hotels, our UK people help there, whatever. And the diversity, and I'm a big believer that diversity has really helped us a lot. So we focused on the quality of the network, who's in it, and the standards. Network engagement, how do we, you know, through events, through digital stuff, through all that kind of stuff, through professional development, and also client engagement. I think that's been a big one. So, and then for us, our particular approach, and this is why, and I'm a big believer, you know, again, I keep saying it, that, you know, this is an and strategy, not an or strategy. And I think that there are multiple ways and paths to success. One of ours that we chose a long time ago is to create a brand preference at the consumer level for the collective, purpose of the organization. So that's been very gratifying. And as I said, I mean, I'll say this to all advisors, whatever, your best clients want you to survive.
Yeah.
No, and if there ever was a time to ask for a referral, if you weren't good at it before, now's the time to ask for a referral.
Absolutely. Well, let's go to Alex. And Matthew brought up this point of engagement. And you're finding that your members are even more engaged now because of this pandemic? You know, they have to in a way, right?
I think the network itself, and I don't mean the signature team, the network itself has been a lifeline for our travel agency owners and for the advisors. The network, the community that's created there, you know, they've needed a shoulder to cry on. They've needed someone to help them through, you know, applying for government assistance or implementing a fee structure or changing compensation structures through this. You know, that for me has been the most fulfilling thing. And you know, what we are is just the facilitator. Right. You know, we talk to these members and they tell it, you know, we hear their stories and we say, oh my gosh, but so-and-so could really use help here. And it would be better coming from you because you have real life experience in doing this. And then we can, you know, we can add and you know, contribute to that, right? And do some research and dig in. So I go back, you know, when I think about the advisors themselves, this idea that if we, and it's not science, but if we can help them be relevant and broaden their reach and help them be more efficient, then they can do the beautiful things that a travel advisor does, right? They can create those dreams and sell them and deliver them to, you know, to their customers through our preferred partners. And so we've really focused on how do we, you know, first, how do we help them survive, right? How do we make sure they all get everything that's coming to them, they understand it? And that's been, you know, a fulfilling, but a painful process, frankly, because I'm used, like these guys are used to, you know, I want to talk about great destinations and products and all that kind of stuff. And now I'm talking about ERTC and PPP and I'm just, you know, shoot me, right? but it's getting everyone through, right? And so now, how do we continue to collaborate as we come out of this, right, to help them be effective and identifying those best customers and selling the best trips with the greatest margins, but delivering, you know, first and foremost, delivering those dreams, those promises that they've made to their customers, right? And the rest of it will come. So for me, yes, the network, the industry has been more important than ever as we've leaned on each other, even this group. Right. You know, we like to say we're friendly competitors. Sometimes we're even more, you know, we're really friendly competitors, but we are competitors. But it's been great through this to learn from each other and to lean on each other a bit because, you know, this industry has to make it and it will. And we're coming out the other side, I think, in a much stronger position than we ever thought was possible. So
absolutely,
I'm optimistic.
Well, you're going to get your wish now because we're going to talk about, you know, sort of lightning round here about products and destinations. And so I want to find out, you know, what are the high-end travel products that are really the most in demand right now and will be in the near term for luxury travelers and base that really on what's selling for your groups. I'll start with you, Gabe.
Yeah, so right now, a lot of this is predicated on borders opening up. But a lot, you know, so I can't say that I've got, you know, the crystal ball into exactly where they're going to end up. But the majority of the inquiries are around the Mediterranean, the Baltic. We're seeing also a lot of inquiries in Southeast Asia, in Bali, in Thailand, and those places. So people are looking to, you know, to go big. And they're looking for those things. The other thing, as I mentioned earlier, are these world cruises. You know, we have record cruises being booked in 22 and 23. So there, you know, these advanced bookings are strong. So those are some of the areas that we're seeing. We're also seeing a lot of demand for private villas, okay, which is another big one, especially out of the UK, and self-contained experiences that include dining. So they don't have to travel off, but they're off the beaten path and they have an element of privacy. So those are some of the elements.
Great. No, that's it sounds. I've heard that a lot from that in terms of destinations too, and we have more destinations opening up. David, from Ensemble's point of view, what's selling well, destinations and products right now, and what will sell well for in 21 and 22?
I think it's just a case of get me out of the house. is what most people are thinking. But
well, we don't let Canadians out, apparently.
So we're not allowed out. We are clearly the forgotten children at this point. But I can honestly say that at first it was my impression that it would be like comfort food, and you know, the things that you want is that people would go back to places that they were most familiar with.
Right.
And in fact, that's what some are doing, but there's also tremendous amount of demand for the more exotics. And it surprises me, but I think that's a case of just validation for what we've all been saying about pent-up demand. I think the greatest challenge for pent-up demand is, you know, it's not a long-term situation when you're talking about anything that's pent up. It's a response. So it's a reaction, and hopefully it will continue for a great deal of time yet. But really, I think that people are more inclined to go to places that they're most familiar with. But to the point that Gabe made about, you know, smaller, more intimate boutique type places, you know, fewer people around, that is clearly what is driving the interest for most people that are, you know, wanting to get back on that horse again.
Absolutely. Now, Matthew, same question. And what are the products and destinations that Virtuoso is seeing are really booking well this year and into next year?
Well, I'll kind of answer it in a couple of parts. Number one, I think because of the limitations, everything that was hot last summer is still hot. I mean, there's no Montana, Wyoming, anything. I mean, all those places are, I mean, there's a shortage of it. Now, I did talk to some of our partners that, and I want to speak shortly about the partners because we should care about our partners, right? That's why we call them partners. But they are a little nervous about, they did the right thing with relaxed cancellation policies, but they also know that a lot of high net worth people have like 3 or 4 reservations going. They're placing their bets.
Yeah.
And so I think that's one of the things that's going right now. I mean, the amount of bookings that were already on the books for us in Italy and Greece and Portugal before we even knew whether there was or wasn't going to be a border opening were pretty incredible. And with hotels not being able to be capacity. So we spent a lot of time over this pandemic in multiple different ways with our Wanderlust program, with all that, really getting people to think ahead, right? To really think ahead. The other one I want to talk about just shortly, and Gabe touched on it, but, you know, the cruise industry got so ridiculously inappropriately maligned by the press,
right?
And they got maligned. They got maligned for something that is completely counterintuitive. They're the only form of travel that actually measures sickness perfectly. Not like by 90% or whatever, but literally perfectly, because they have medical staff, they have to do everything, whatever. I think that cruising is, I mean, you're seeing it. I think cruising is going to come back in a way. You see all these advanced sailings, et cetera, and why things are booking up. And I think that's going to be, and I made a statement along, you know, not too many months ago, full travel and tourism will not recover without the recovery of cruising, not because just of the size of cruising, but because of the mobility of cruising and where it goes and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's super important. But again, some of the other things that I think are going to be remnants of this, people have also learned that I had a view from leadership with Tony Capuano, the new CEO of Marriott, on Monday, and he made a really point. There's a whole lot of people that have decided that, you know what, I'm not going to take a 3-day with my family anymore. I'm going to take a longer thing and work from there. So
right.
The ability to work from different places and all that, I think it's going to change the way we have it. And one of the other interesting people that spoke at WTTC, and I know sometimes people in the industry, you know, but he's worth listening to, even if you don't have to agree with it. But Brian Chesky was interviewed during WTTC, and he said his view was that more people will go to more places than ever before, right? The variety of places people are gonna go is gonna be interesting. And I do make one prediction. I'm gonna put it out there. I actually think that urban travel is gonna come back faster than people think. I know right now the conventional wisdom is that cities are gonna, but you know, when Fred Dixon won that award and talking about New York has refound its outdoorness, right? And things like that. And I don't know if you saw that picture of that test concert in the UK, right, where everybody had to have a negative test and no mask, and it was like mosh pit, like the good old days. And there's some really interesting things going on where hotels in Manhattan, for example, are doing buyouts of entire floors at reasonable rates.
Right.
Well, they're only full. They're only at 20% capacity, of course, right? So I think you're going to see some of that come back faster than we think.
Well, we hope so, absolutely, and it is going to come back in different ways. And Alex, I'll leave it to you to wrap this up in terms of products and
our lightning round.
Lightning round it too, but this is probably the last question. But in terms of what products, what destinations are you seeing and as most popular among luxury travelers right now?
Yeah, so anything that's been shut that's getting open has great demand, right? Because people want to go first wherever they can, and then second of all, where they've been restricted from going in the past. What we're seeing is, and it echoes a lot of what the guy said, is, you know, if someone was looking at a 7-day cruise before, you know, in June of last year, I can't wait to get on a cruise. Well, by the time they get on a cruise in January of 2022, it's a world cruise, right? their dreams have grown bigger. Hey, we're just going to go. We're going to get this. And whether it's longer or more high end or further away, that's what's happening, right? The longer they've been cooped up, the more they're dreaming and the more exotic or long or expensive it becomes. And so we have to capitalize on that and find those great opportunities for them. In terms of what's booking, obviously over the last year, US travel's been booming.
Right.
You know, people are exploring this incredible country we have and the national parks and, you know, and getting to, you know, to the Montana ranches and all the rest of it. And that's been wonderful to see. And that's continuing. We're certainly seeing the same where people are booked in Europe for this summer and also booked in Montana because they're going to wait and see what's open and what they can do. And heck, they might try and do both because now they can work while they're traveling. Right. And so that's been something. But I also think as an overall trend, we are seeing, you know, outdoors, we're seeing expedition, we're seeing adventure as continuing, you know, it's accelerating that trend that we were seeing even pre-pandemic. And it's good because there's some great capacity coming on the cruise ship side for expedition. People are getting more and more creative in terms of, you know, what they're offering in terms of adventure travel and it's becoming more accessible. So, you know, those are all things we're seeing, but it's been, you know, it's really fun to see Greece book up the way it is. And it's going to be really great when Scandinavia opens and people are going to flock to there. So, you know, I want to go back. I had a similar chat with the mayor of Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago as he's trying to figure out what does it look like, right? So I think there's a huge opportunity for these destinations to really evaluate, you know, what is their over tourism? What is their tourism? What do they want to attract? Who are their most valuable customers? And how do we attract those in greater numbers while maybe not having some of the other less desirable tourism there? And so those that are being proactive and being thoughtful, I think, have a huge opportunity. And we just want to contribute to that. Obviously, we think you know, the customers we're sending have incredible value to these destinations, and frankly, the destinations need it more than ever. Right? Travel and tourism is so critical to the GNP, to employment, and everything else. We want to contribute to it, and the best way to do that is to send valuable customers there that are going to stay longer, spend more, and do all those things. So we're excited.
Well, on that note, I want to thank all of you for being part of this panel. Thank you, David. Thank you, Gabe. Thank you, Alex. And thank you, Matthew. I think you made some great points. And I think a lot of advisors who are looking in on this should listen to what you've been saying about what's going on in the market today with luxury travel. And I want to remind all of you out there that take a look at our exhibition floor and seeing the booths out there. These are the folks who are supporting this forum, this virtual vacation events. And also, we also have other panels. We're going to have lots of panels on cruising, expedition cruising, tours, hotels, And we'll have individual travel advisors as well. So thank you very much again, guys. Thank you. I hope to see all of you live very shortly somewhere.
All right. Likewise.
Thanks. A hug. See you.
Thanks, James.